Yes.
Is this the champagne prosecco link in our script?
It is. No, actually, I did it wrong. But we're back. All right, Ashley, bring us in.
All right.
But also,
yeah, I was gonna say, guys, this is this is not as cool as we think it is.
Also, I'm really tempted to shake the champagne. Yeah, I won't get it.
Sorry. Hello, and welcome to Judgewitical, a new podcast from the magically young, elegantly hip, and helplessly lay editors of America Media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news, often over drinks. I'm Ashley McKinless, and I'm joined by Zach Davis.
Hey, everyone.
And Olga Segura.
Hey, guys.
How you guys doing?
Pretty good.
I am great.
Can you set the scene? Where are we?
Our new studio.
Woo! That's basically done.
Basically. Almost. Kind of. Almost. Not really.
Still under construction, but yeah. Definitely workable for now.
Yeah.
And it's pretty professional. I know. We've got like 3 huge screens behind us, brick walls.
We're basically on the view.
actually, if that's a perfect way to imagine us right now, we're at this like half round table, trying to stare at each other awkwardly, swiveling back and forth.
Yeah, we'll be tweeting out pictures and all the things later. Yes,
definitely.
Speaking of our new studio, what are we drinking this week, Zach?
So to celebrate a sort of a housewarming, we've gotten some champagne. It's really Prosecco. But
we can call it champagne.
Yeah, millennial champagne.
Prosecco, millennial champagne.
Sue us, France.
All right. And so we're just going to bring in the new studio with this. So
pop bottles.
Okay.
Hold, please. Going to try not to break everything.
Easy.
Careful. Ooh, wow, that was perfect.
Well done.
All right, so I'm just going to give us some of that.
Wow, Zach gave himself a really generous pour.
Wow, okay. Do you see this drop that he gave me? Sure. Wish I could drink, but, you know.
Who are we talking to this week, Olga?
So this week we're talking with Tommy Tai, who's a blogger, podcaster, and author of The Catholic Hipster. So we'll be talking about what that means exactly, and full disclosure for all of our Ashley fans out there.
Who's this Tommy Tai guy? For you guys all of, going behind my back.
So for all of Ashley's fans, you were actually not in this dream with us for this interview because you were doing like really cool hip things in Rome, right?
Yes, I was that young hip lay editor on the Rome pilgrimage.
Jealous, super jealous. And after we talk to Tai, we've got our Consolations and Desolations, the part of the show where we tell you where we did or didn't find God this week.
Excellent. But first, we have Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you do not have to. First, the U.S. bishops were meeting in Baltimore this week for their annual meeting where they do elections for the heads of different committees. It's all very like insidery baseball stuff we won't bore you with.
But my favorite thing that came out of this conference was the USCCB's Twitter account just recorded a video that is 9 minutes long of bishops coming down the escalator.
that was pretty epic.
Which is kind of amazing to watch. But other more serious things happened here, right?
Yes. Like Bishop George Murray, who heads the U.S. Bishop's new ad hoc committee on racism, gave a pretty impassioned speech about what the Catholic Church has done in the past and what it should be doing to confront racism now. He said racial hatred is often in hiding. But for now, after Charlottesville, it's on full display in the United States, and that the committee he heads is working to listen to the voices of the people who are suffering because of racism.
And Greg Erlandson from Catholic News Service reported that Bishop Murray said that he gets letters asking why he's so concerned about racism since most African Americans are not Catholic.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's an insane... It's mainly racist thing to write to a bishop, but a uniquely audacious thing to write to a black
bishop.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, why would he not care about the experience of all black Americans in this country?
Right. And so his response was, they are our brothers and sisters in Christ, which is an apt one, I think.
So speaking of people, of Catholics involved in speaking about civil rights, a nun who was very well known in the civil rights movement recently passed away this Saturday, Sister Mary Antona Ebo, who was considered by many to be a pioneer of the civil rights movement. She marched in Selma 3 days after Bloody Sunday, which was when protesters were attacked on the Pedicus Bridge. And she was a Franciscan nun for 71 years, and she was one of six Catholic nuns who was actually marching in Selma, and the only African American one. So there's this really, So there's this really powerful picture of her speaking during these protests, and
she's remained active, like she's in St. Louis,
she spoke after Ferguson, so she remained very involved up until her days. So a very inspirational person to look up to.
I'm thinking we need to add a segment of the show where we just memorialize nuns.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's one of our favorite things.
It's true. All right, what's next, Olga?
So, Pope Francis has been kind of reprimanding Catholics a bit lately. He wants us to stop bringing our phones to Mass, says that you should fully immerse yourself in the experience and actually take part in what the Mass is actually about, which, you know, it's not a show. He says it's you go to Mass to encounter the passion, the resurrection of the Lord.
Yeah. He has this great quote that the Mass says, lift up your hearts, not your cell phones. Yeah.
I will never log off, Pope Francis.
No, and I have to say, you mentioned before, I was in Rome and I got to go to one of the general audiences that the Pope Francis gives every Wednesday. And, you know, it's very cool. Like, the Pope drives right by you, but just like everyone has their phone and is just looking at him through their phone. And so I refused to take out my phone and just like looked at him. And then as soon as he drove by, everyone was just like staring at their phones, comparing the picture they took, that it was all the exact same picture that they could find on Google. And I was just like, why not just be present? And that's not even the Mass. That's just like seeing the Pope.
But, you know, when I studied abroad in Rome, in one of my more pretentious phases in my life, I've gone through several.
Wow.
But I was sort of like...
Zach pretentious? Never.
But I was in this mood of not taking any photos because I was really into this be present in the moment thing. So one of the byproducts is I have no photos of my time studying abroad. But also...
Do you regret that?
A little. Okay. But secondly, so that same experience where Pope Francis was driving by, while everyone else had their phone up, I climbed up onto the fence, reached out my arm, and Pope Francis gave me a high five.
Nice.
So better yet, better than a photo is that memory that I have no proof of.
Right. Okay. So what's next, Ashley?
So he doesn't want you to have your phones. Mm-hmm. He also doesn't want you to have cigarettes, which, you know, the Vatican announced this week that it would no longer sell cigarettes through it. So I learned a lot reading this piece. So the Vatican has like this whole like duty-free thing going on, which a lot of people have see as maybe corrupt, but it means they sell pretty cheap cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And they made approximately $11 million in profit off these cigarettes every year. That's like their second biggest source of revenue. And so...
So Ashley, I'm kind of getting the sense that you don't agree with banning cigarette sales.
Yeah. Catholics are supposed to be the fun ones.
So this is tarnishing our fun image of Catholics.
Because the same article also said that the Vatican has the highest per capita consumption or sale of wine. And so like...
It's all being used for Mass.
Oh, sure.
Because they're so holy. God.
No. So Pope Francis obviously is doing this for good reasons. Mm-hmm. He says...
He has one lung.
he lost half a lung.
He has one and a half lungs.
But the Holy See, he said, the Holy See cannot contribute to an activity that clearly damages the health of people. And like,
that's kind of positive.
Like,
I can get behind
my
that.
My libertarian streak is like, you know, former popes have smoked. Benedict smoked. Many saints have smoked. I think we can let people make their own decision.
Who cares
about
if our
that.
Prophets are soaked in the blood of the people who've died from smoking?
They chose to smoke.
Oh,
I, you know, we're drinking right now. A lot of people have died from drinking.
He's not banning smoking everywhere.
Right. It's just at the Vatican, right?
He's not banning smoking. He's banning the sale of cigarettes.
That's true. Okay, good point. Good point.
Got it. Okay.
So that would be pretty prohibitive if you can't even buy them. But whatever. I'm not at the Vatican and I don't smoke, so I don't really know why I care so much.
Hold on. What's our next story?
So the world's first Catholic Jewish school campus is opening up in opened up in Scotland last week. So there will be two schools, well, three. It's a Catholic school, a Jewish school, and then a non-denominational nursery. And the officials of both schools are kind of hoping that this will be like a great opportunity for students from both sides to learn more about each other and engage in interreligious dialogue at a very young age. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and that, it just sort of makes sense, too, to have, like, if they're sharing a campus, mm-hmm. to kind of be together.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I kind of like the idea of, like, putting people in a space where they're going to have encounter, but, like, not trying to, like, get rid of the differences. Like, mm-hmm. they're, no one's going to have to, like, give up their faith. Agreed. To, like, be in, yeah. this, like, yeah. interfaith community. It's like they can be distinctly Catholic, mm-hmm. distinctly Jewish, but still be, like, interacting in a positive way.
So. And they're kids, and this is the that's, like, one of the best times mm-hmm. to do it, right?
Yeah. Very cool. What's next, Olga?
So next year's Met Gala is going to be Catholic themed. Now, for those of our listeners who might not know what the Met Gala is, it's an annual fundraising event where celebrities show up in dresses a specific theme, and it's to raise money for the Metropolitan Costume Institute. And next year's is going to be Catholic themed. Now, a lot of people are wondering, what could possibly go wrong when you have celebrities like the Kardashians trying to interpret what it means to be Catholic themed?
Now, you're really excited about this, though.
Yeah, yeah.
So first, reasons to be excited about this. Tell me why I should be pumped for Nicki Minaj hitting the red carpet, Catholic-themed.
Well, it's not even for Nicki Minaj. It's that it's going to be hosted by three women, Donatella Versace, Amala Clooney, and Rihanna, who's fantastic.
Like Versace?
Like Versace.
Was Rihanna raised Catholic?
I don't think so. Hmm. But if she was, Riri.
Get some intel on that.
The Met has started off on a kind of nice foot. So the costumes that will be displayed during this exhibition, they've met with consultants to make sure that anything that's being shown there is not offensive.
Is it going to be like Pope Benedict's red shoes and that sort of stuff?
I hope so.
One, yeah, because he's
pretty much a fashion icon.
Yeah, right. much more so than Pope Francis.
Francis named Best Dressed by GQ?
Yeah, GQ. And like,
yeah, 2015 or something.
Yeah, that was the honeymoon period. Now people are like, boring, all white, all the time. Yeah.
Where's all the red that Benedict started?
What would you guys wear to this?
Good question. I would definitely go with a tonsure, which is the hairstyle that monks had in the Middle Ages where they just shaved a halo of hair.
My brother was that like for fifth grade and I still remember it. It was such a great
Yeah. So honestly, if they're not doing that, then are they trying?
Speaking of secular interest in Catholic themes, Zach, what's our next story?
So one of the most popular movies in America right now is a movie about a girl growing up who goes to Catholic school, mm-hmm. Lady Bird, which it did not beat Thor at the box office, but you know, I think
what can,
right. But it did way better than it was expected to mm-hmm. do. The New York Times called it a perfect movie. It's one of the first, depictions of Catholic school that she says she's seen, mm-hmm. In film or TV shows that is sort of, I don't know if it's positive, but it's not. No,
just like true to regular mm-hmm. life, not like a sensationalized, like, oh, nuns. I mean, I'm sure abuse did happen, but like most depictions you see in movies are either of abuse mm-hmm. or like oppressive, like cultures where people feel like they can't be themselves because they're at a school like this. So
right. Olga, and you went to Catholic school, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think I was going to jump on what you said, Zach. Like there's this, full disclosure, I haven't seen the movie yet. But one of the things that I've been seeing is for even people who have not seen the movie, it's just created this sense of like nostalgia and just wanting to return to be like, oh, I remember how I used to roll up my skirt, or here were all these hymns that I used to listen to, or like here are 30 signs that you went to an all-girls Catholic high school. So it's been really nice because it very much feels, just from the conversations I've had, like a movie that stays very true to the experience I had in high school, which was one where, like, you know, you volunteered, you played sports, you had friends, you had nuns that were cool, you had people who were strict, but it was just a very positive experience. And it feels nice to kind of see this, people talking about something like this.
So listeners, did you go to Catholic school? Or did you know people who went to Catholic school? What were your experiences in Catholic school? What were your impressions of people who went to Catholic school? Write us, let us know, jesuitical@americamedia.org. So do you have a beer right now?
I have Sierra Nevada, yes. Yeah,
oh my
Nevada,
God.
That's what we have.
We have the Oktoberfest.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, cool.
Awesome. And I will let Olga start the show.
Okay. Today, we're talking with Tommy Tai, author of The Catholic Hipster Handbook. Welcome to Jesuitical, Tommy.
Thank you so much for having me. What a sweet honor to be sharing a drink with strangers in the middle of the day, in the middle of the week.
You know, like giving people an excuse to drink in the middle of the day, I feel like I'm living my best life. So thank you.
This is the best version of yourself, most definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Tommy, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and about the Catholic Hipster Handbook?
Yeah, of course. So what I do, I guess I'm like a husband and a father. So that's probably the first thing I would say.
Your wife and kids. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to. Yeah, nod to them, of course. we have four sons, and we live out here in the California Bay Area. And this book was started as a joke on Twitter. I just made a joke that it would be funny if we wrote a book about Catholics being hipsters. And the next thing I knew, it was I was sent the email address of a publisher, and away we go. I have no idea why I'm here, but you know, blessed be God forever, I guess.
So what you're telling me is that if I hold out hope, eventually one of my tweets will get me a book deal?
You know, Olga, the saddest thing is that like a lot of people have reached out to me and said, like, can you tell us like the process in like how you get into the writing world? Mm-hmm. And I feel so guilty because honestly, it was like, it was a tweet. It was one tweet.
So what's in the book?
Oh, sure. So the book has a bunch of different sections, small chapters that you can like easily read with our short attention span we have these days. We're covering all kinds of topics that are like, what are cool things about being Catholic and how does our Catholic faith and teaching kind of relate to things that we find cool nowadays, like finding craft breweries, like going to the farmer's market and kind of eating local. And also mixing in like going to adoration, going to confession, where do we find Mary in the Bible? Just sort of like looking at all these different aspects about how being Catholic is actually really cool, kids. Mm-hmm. So be Catholic.
And one of the things I appreciate about the book is it's the format that you talk about is, as you say, very digestible, but it's also got some like activities involved in there too. So you've got this essay, Forgotten Saint or Forgotten Prayer and Saint, and then an activity at the end, right? So who do you think is going to benefit from that format?
Yeah, you know, I think it's great because I think we oftentimes when I'm reading and engaging in Catholic media, I'm really like wanting something practical. So that's what we try to do with the activities, because so much of what I read in the Catholic world is like really great ideas that I really want to like grab by the horns. But then I'm like, how do I do this though? Like, what's like the do part? And so that's what we tried to do. So I think like people who are maybe like just going to mass every Sunday and not super engaged in their faith, like I was at a time, people who are kind of maybe drifting away from the faith because they don't feel like it connects to like their current life, I think it's a great way for them to see the beauty and richness that we have and also to do something like go visit a Marian shrine. They're everywhere, right? It's something very practical that we can do. Even one of the activities is just follow people on Twitter. So this is a very like, we set a low bar.
So Tommy, do you call yourself, you probably get this question a lot, but do you call yourself a hipster or are you just a hipster in the Catholic world?
Yeah, only to people who don't meet me in real life, I guess. The first thing everyone, whoever meets me, they're like, you're not a hipster in any way. No. So yeah, like the Catholic hipster thing sort of like took off. I made a poll on like a really cheesy blog that I started a couple years ago to kind of like crown the Catholic hipster of the year, just to say like, who's the coolest Catholic doing cool things? And that's sort of where it took off. I'm indeed not a hipster. I mean, I have like thick glasses and I do, you know, enjoy a good craft beer from time to time, but
oh, so you're
I don't
practically
wear skinny
there.
Jeans. I'm almost there. Yeah, I guess so.
and most importantly, you're saying that you're not
exactly
one.
I think you checked off all the three things, Tommy.
Thank you guys. I can now have you guys have like a Jesuitical imprimatur that I can like carry around or something like that to show people.
We're actually a stamps on order right now. Mm-hmm. So we'll let you know when that comes.
Yeah. So the basic idea is like, you know, the hipster culture currently is sort of like being countercultural, like going to a butcher instead of going to, you know, your local grocery store for meat and how great that is to do things the hard way. And Catholics do things the hard way better than anybody else. So I'd say we're the ultimate hipsters.
Yeah, we do some hard things, definitely. So part of being a hipster is going against the grain. This is something we've talked about on the show a few times. Is like, on the one hand, being Catholic in some circles is going against the grain. But for a lot of people, you know, the way you put it in your own life, it was just sort of like going every Sunday, just going through the motions. And it doesn't feel that like rebellious or against the grain at all.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It kind of feels like, well, this is what my parents did, and so this is just what I do, and it's totally normal, and I went to youth group and have friends who do it, so it's really easy. I think at some point, for me, it's like we really have to take a look at embracing like what the church teaches. And I think in our current culture, it's really, really radical because the church is not right. It's not left. You know, and so that's something that's very different to our culture right now. Everybody's like, are you conservative or are you liberal? Like, pick a side. And when you're Catholic, it's like you have this really cool opportunity to dabble yourself in all these different areas that other people are like so black and white in. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very radical thing to be like, you know, like, yeah, I follow the church's teaching against abortion, but I really think that we need to do more for social justice, right? And it's like, people are like, wait, what? Like, that doesn't even make sense. And so it's a really, being Catholic is like super radical. To embrace the catechism and the Sermon of the Mount, that's a pretty radical stance to take. And so that's where I would say I stand on it.
It's true. Jesus was a rad dude. As I don't know, is that what the hipsters yes. say?
Although, if you're ever on Twitter, don't say he was a radical, because I did that one time, and boy, people were pretty upset.
Really?
Why? Well, I mean, I know why, but, you know.
Say more. Did you stand by it at the end of the day, or?
Yeah, heck yeah, I did. I mean, my gosh, like, you know, just think of him speaking to the woman at the well, and like all of these things that he did that, like, think about appearing to Mary Magdalene first, right? That's radical. And like his call to like the way that he would like call people to act and behave in all of us today is super radical. So I thought, boy, this seems like pretty not very like hot take. I would think everybody would agree with this. But I think people have taken that term and been like, oh, you know, it means like you're trying to pin Jesus into some like leftist communist, you know, cause or whatever, as opposed to just being radical in the moment. And even today, 2000 years ago, he was on earth. He's still radical today. Mm-hmm. We need to get our act together.
Amen. So one of the things I think about hipsterdom is that it's sort of like this exclusive thing, right? You have to find part of the appeal is doing something that other people aren't. Whereas Catholicism, it's meant to be pretty inclusive. And I think one of the things that I see troubling with like hipsterdom influencing the church is like when someone has their niche and they think it's better than or their devotion or their way of being and like sort of hold it over other people.
Mm-hmm. Boy, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Do you find totally. That super? Because I think people find that off-putting about hipsters in general. Right. Like, yeah. But especially like they also find that off-putting about Catholics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that like pretty disconcerting. So people might see that like I would share something or, you know, write an article or talk about something very faithful to church teaching. And then people will be like super upset with me if I say I also really like going to mass in the vernacular, you know, with the priest facing us. And people are like, what? Oh, my gosh. Like, how dare you? So, yes, we have this like this encroaching kind of danger of people saying, like, my way of worship and my way of spirituality within the Catholic Church is like the right way to do it, and it's superior to what yours is. So I can see that that concern, and it pops up all the time, and it's troubling. But I mean, really, like, I think that that's us superimposing our thing on Catholicism, where Catholicism is a lot more like, here's this gigantic treasure chest of spirituality, like, find what fits for you and kind of take that in your walk with God. So yeah, that's a prayer I have, that people will coexist between the Novus Ordo and the traditional Latin Mass. Between people who say the rosary and people who don't. I mean, some people don't click with the rosary, and like they need to be told that that's okay, right? That's totally fine. There's so many other devotions and spiritualities that might talk to you, and they shouldn't be like lambasted for it.
Yeah, I think one of the worst things, or maybe not worst, but just most counterproductive things we do as a church is like spend so much effort trying to get someone to do the thing mm-hmm. when there's so many things.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like there's homeless people in my town here in the Bay Area, and we're complaining about how there was altar rails put into our parish. Right. It's like, come on, can we get out there and like help these people instead of arguing with each other about this?
No, absolutely. Another,
if you're like, no, we can't.
No. Oh yeah. No. Just only complain about other church things to other church people. One of the endearing qualities I think hipsters have is like the pursuit for the authentic. Do you think that hipsters can find that in the church? Because a lot of people, who are our age, ourselves struggle a lot to get past some of the church's like very public shortcomings in being authentic.
Yeah. Wow. Most definitely. Whenever somebody asks me, like, what's the key to evangelizing, I always say be authentic. My wife and I, we lost our son last year. He lived for like an hour after he was born.
Oh, man.
And one of the things that a lot of people tried to push was this thing of like, well, you have to like share about how people want you to share about how you still have joy and you still have hope and you still are happy and you should go on smiling when you're suffering. And that was really not my my experience or my take that I was like throwing out there for people when we were sharing our experience. Mine was more like, I feel hopeless. I'm super angry at God and I'm miserable, but I still know I need to pray and I'm still trying to like push forward. And so I think that authenticity is super important too. People can walk around with like a fake smile and say, I'm just so happy no matter what happens because of Jesus. For me personally, that doesn't speak to me as well as saying my life is really tough and miserable, but I'm going to keep pushing on because of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tommy, I think that's really fascinating because I think for me as a Catholic, the authenticity that I've found in my 20s is really what's pulled me back into the faith. Like when I was in college, I was surrounded by people who are like, well, you got to go to mass. This is how you have to do it. Then in my later 20s, like working here at America, just kind of being like, wait, the same kind of doubt that you feel, all of these awful emotions that you feel, other Catholics feel it too. And that's okay because that is a way of being an authentic Christian. And that's part of it, you know?
Yeah, and it's totally just like a way of being too, because like, and you don't really know it until you see it in another person. It's hard to just like hit someone over the head with it,
right?
Yeah, most definitely, no 2x4s. But I think you know we have to awaken ourselves a little bit to the reality of like what happened to Jesus, what happened to Mary, like the mother of God when Jesus was here on Earth, and we have to see that as like this is the Christian way of life, right? I'm sure that Mary wasn't like hugging the foot of the cross with a big smile across her face because she loved Jesus. Mm-hmm. She was there because she loved Jesus and was like suffering, but she kept going. She stayed. And so I think that's kind of like the message that resonates with people rather than just this like, oh, Christianity makes me so happy.
Right.
Which in the end, hopefully it will. This is going great.
Yeah. Really, so on that note, Tommy,
down low.
One of the constant themes in this book is this whole concept of rediscovering Catholic culture and kind of rediscovering things that are very familiar to us. And I thought your chapter on how, you know, the rosary had been a part of your life since you could remember, but after the loss of your mother, you went through this phase where it became like this thing that you went through for prayer and like the consolation that it offered you. So do you think there's sort of this sense of longing for Catholic culture and this need to kind of rediscover what Catholic culture is?
Yeah, you know, every time I see some new article coming out of like Huffington Post or something about what people are trying and what they're searching for in our culture, I'm like, oh my gosh, like we've been doing that forever in the Catholic Church. Like you guys are just wanting to come here. Mm-hmm. So I really think like we have this answer for what people are longing for. And it might not be like the traditional thing that people are, you know, thinking that they're looking for, but it's like, you know, meditative prayer. We have this amazing thing, like self-reflection, like being present in the moment, like all these traditions. To me, I see people striving for them and I'm like, ah, like we have that. We're over here. Like we should be like waving our flags, like welcoming people to rediscover Catholicism. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of work to do, a lot of work.
Do you think part of it is that we've stopped doing a lot of these things?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think it's really easy not to do all this stuff. You know, we're super busy. I know it's like I have to use my commute to be able to like spend time praying because otherwise I don't know when I would do it, you know? Mm-hmm. So we really have to kind of like find these times to set aside. And it's so difficult in our culture today. It's like, you know, I should have been praying today, but instead I was like tweeting at you guys on Twitter, which was also fun, but I could have been using that time to pray. And I think like that's a great witness to be able to take the time to step outside and show people what we have to offer.
And I think part of it is like this sort of decline in parish life. And, you know, a lot of these, when the parish was like your social setting and where everything happened, it's where you had your friends, it's where your life revolved around, you know, all of these devotions and practices sort of just embedded themselves into your daily life. How do you think we sort of reclaim some of these things where, when that's not the case anymore?
I would love to see like an awakening of like, how can families like get involved during times when families are all awake and at it to like kind of give back? I think for me, it's like what we need to do as in parishes is like have this like radical call to like helping others. Some parishes are obviously better at it than others, but I think like being able to give people opportunities to get involved, to stretch themselves a little bit, to give of themselves, and doing it at times when people are available and feel able to do it, you know?
Right.
I think that's a big deal, right? It's like when I'm like, I'd like to help the poor. So I like go onto a parish website and it's like, okay, great. Like we have a food pantry on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. on right. the first Tuesday of every month. And I'm like, I can't do that.
It's easier to go to the bank.
Like, right. Exactly. Right. And that's like, I've really thought about that with my kids. Like I, you know, don't want to like write a check and be like, here, kids, like this is how you answer Jesus's call to help others. It's like, I want to put them in the minivan and like drive to Catholic Worker in Oakland and be like, look at how people are living and look mm-hmm. how bad they need us. You know what I mean? Need us to like give back. So opportunities like that to get our kids involved in, it's like, I mean, when we took our kids to like hand out Christmas gifts at this Catholic Worker thing, and it was like, we weren't doing anything, right? We were just handing out Christmas gifts to people. That's not that great of a thing to do because we didn't get the gifts for them, right? We were just like giving them out. So I'm not trying to be special or something. But to be able to hear my kids talk on the way back from doing that, that experience for them was like so profound to see that some kid would come and have like this one tiny gift that was given to them by my kids. And then to have the kid just be like so grateful, that really had like a huge impact on them. So more things like that would be fantastic. Faith formation is great for my kids to go to once a week, but being able to do something like that kind of really, to me, kind of shows what Jesus asks us to be.
Yeah. In retrospect, maybe that's more impactful than giving them a dollar to put in the collection basket.
Agreed. So Tommy,
I think so, but I will say I don't give them a dollar to put in the collection basket and they really hate that.
So Tommy, one final question for you. If you could canonize anyone, living or dead, Catholic or non-Catholic, who would it be? And why?
Oh gosh. I mean, okay, obviously the two that come to mind are Dorothy Day and Oscar Romero. I was so excited. And I blame Father James Martin for my excitement because his tweets about the Oscar Romero like canonization news that ended up being fake.
Oh,
it made
I know.
Me so excited when
yeah.
I saw tweets about that. What a letdown. Oh, my gosh. But it would definitely be one of those two. Let's go with Dorothy Day. I say we go with her. Oscar Romero is going to get there. That's for sure. So I'll go with Dorothy Day because her story, her example. Man, like reading The Long Loneliness for me was just like a life-changing event because I really saw somebody who was a sinner like me who kind of like worked their way through things and kind of got what Jesus was asking us to do and then did it. It's like a lot of us can get to that point where we're like, yeah, like, man, that Sermon on the Mount really is telling us to go do something pretty intense. But then she just like went and did it. And it's just mind-blowing. And so I would love to be able to hear her name chanted off in the Litany of Saints at Mass on All Saints Day.
Amen.
Great.
All right. Well, Tommy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. And your book is The Catholic Hipster Handbook, which our listeners can buy wherever books are sold.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. It was such a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks, Tommy.
All right. Now it's time for listener feedback. We got a wonderful email from Zach Gear. Gear? Does that sound right?
That does sound right.
And he sent us a consolation. He said, my consolation for the week was my mom, girlfriend, and I volunteering at our parish's fall festival, serving food, and then having my dad and her immediate family join us for dinner afterward. It was just a wonderful, loving group, and to see our two families coming together, I really felt his presence with us. So aww. That's good.
Blended. Thank you, Zach. With an H, not our Zach.
And we, again, love to hear if you have consolations mm-hmm. or desolations from the week and you're doing some own reflection on your own life, write us, let us know.
Yeah, because as we've said before, it's hard to come up with our own, so we need some inspiration from you guys.
There's a and if there's a community of people doing it, right?
Yeah, it makes mm-hmm. it a little bit easier. Speaking of which, time for consolations and desolations, the part of our show where we talk about where we found God this week and where it was harder to find God. What do you have, Zach?
So I've got a desolation this week. As you know, the holidays are coming up, which are bring up a lot of things in a lot of people. But for me, I tend to get really stressed out about this time of year, mostly just trying to manage, you know, going home and making sure that you see all the people you're supposed to, all the families you're supposed to, all the friends you're supposed to, can be really stressful. And I think the desolation for me is I have an expectation that those times are meant to be times of communion with other people, relaxation, and
football,
sport-related content. And right now, all I have is anxiety about what's going to come and who I'm going to disappoint, whether that's myself or a friend or a family member. And so that is my desolation this week.
Mm. Yeah. What about you, Olga?
I've also got a desolation this week. So this past weekend, it was my parents' birthday, and my mom's birthday is November 11th. My dad's is November 12th. So we always do like a joint thing. It makes it easier for their kids to plan stuff. And it's usually a really positive, fun time. And this year they were just kind of, I guess because they're getting older and they've been here for almost 30 years, they really got into kind of recapping all these various traumas that they experienced back in the Dominican Republic. And then also talking about how immigrating here was very hard for them and is still hard for them 25 plus years later. And just kind of seeing them struggle with that and then me being so unable to help them in that moment just made me really angry and just wondering, like, how can God allow certain things to happen to people, to the people that you love? And it's just been, I've been struggling with this all week and I haven't found any kind of consolation because I don't understand how to deal with the people that I love being hurt, you know? So it's been very desolating and it's very much been pulling me away from God this week, so. Mm.
Ashley?
Oh, well, I also have a desolation, but I'll try to like twist it into a consolation at the end so we can end on a higher note.
It's not about that. It's
yeah,
not about
no. Okay.
We don't have to always be happy.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, so as I've mentioned before, I moved a month and a half ago, but last weekend was the first time I wasn't traveling on a weekend and I was just at my apartment. You talked about expectations. I had this expectation that I was going to really like just like having one single roommate who's not always there. I would have the place to myself. But instead, I just kind of felt very lonely. I'm like naturally an introvert, so I'm not one to make plans. And so then like after like 24 hours of like not seeing anyone, I was starting to feel very lonely. And my like instead of like, you know, inhabiting that solitude, using it for prayer, like my instinct is to just try distract myself and read things and watch things. And so like just kind of like get away from the present moment instead of like seeing what it's trying to tell me. Mm-hmm. or seeing God in that solitude. I just kind of like run away from it. Mm-hmm. So that was desolating. But I know I don't have to bring consolation into it, but I was so like, I went to my regular 6 p.m. mass and this time I actually did go to like the young adult, like mm-hmm. wine and cheese hour because I was nice. Just like, I need to see people. and it was good. And it was a good reminder that I could, you know, just always do that.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Should we get out of here?
Let's do it. Jesuitical is brought to you by America Media and produced by Eloise Blondio. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit information provided by Eric Sundrup, SJ. Engineering by Angelo Jesus Conta. Adverbs provided by Annika and Andre Conta. Are those your siblings? Oh my gosh, that's so great. Our logo is by Sean Trivoli. You can follow us on Twitter at Jesuitical Show and please subscribe to us on iTunes, where we topped the top 20 chart this week.
Yes, thank you guys for getting us there, by the way.
In religion and through China.
So yes, subscribe, and then please leave us a review so that we can stay in the top 20. That would be great. Shout out to, all right, you guys ready?
Yep.
Ready.
Olette.
Sam Pence.
Poker Maniac Zors.
Lighter Mike.
Musica Chica 877.
Riley Kate.
Kate Becker.
Jay Kenneth Darn.
Kennedy RN.
Kennedy RN, yeah.
I think they're a nurse. NDO, ND Opus.
Sonatina 26.
Andrew Grobel.
M. Warner.
MS Brit C.
Eric Denby.
And Bam Filet.
And apologies if we butchered your iTunes
sorry
name.
About that.
I am certainly
And
got it right.
Finally, send us your questions, feedback, cocktail recipes, and tell us where you found God this week at jesuitical@americamedia.org. for American Media. I'm Ashley McKinless. For Zach Davis and Olga Segura, we'll see you next week.